So this evening I'd like to speak about the secret of achieving true happiness in this world. And I'd like to do more than just talk about it. I'd like to reveal to everybody in this room the secret of how to experience true happiness in life. And no charge, absolutely free. And we're going to like to do that right now. So who would like to hear about that? Oh, that was a better response than I expected. There we go. Okay. So therefore, without further ado, I will read something from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is no exaggeration. This is actually revealing to everybody. This is the secret of how to be happy in life, in this world, even while we're here in the material body and the material world. And there we go. Okay. So I'm reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I'm going to be reading from the fifth canto, from the fifth chapter, and text number one, actually. And since I'm the only one with a book and nothing's been written up, I'll just chant the Sanskrit, and then I will read the translation, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Rishabha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Rishabha Ucha. Oh, you can try if you like. Nayam Deho Deha Bhajan Nirloke. Kastan Kaman Arhate Vidbhujanye. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Sudyad yasmat brahma sokyam tvanantam. Now I'll read the translation and Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is Lord Rishabhadev told his sons. Lord Rishabhadev is an incarnation of Krishna. He says, he had 100 sons. He says, my dear boys, of all living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And when one attains this position, he attains eternal, blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. So there it is. I told you, I was going to tell you. Did you catch it? That's it. That's the secret right there. I'll read it again because it's it. Very simply and directly stated. And, of course, I'm going to read Srila Prabhupada's purport and we'll get some further insight into it. So Lord Rishabhadev told his sons, my dear boys, of all living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. Here it is. Here comes the real essence. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. The Sanskrit word that refers to that in this verse is tapo, or tapasya. And Prabhupada defines that as austerity and penance. And later on in the purport, we'll say it's voluntarily accepting inconveniences to the mind and body for the purpose of making spiritual advancement in life. Okay? So one should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And what's the result? One attains this position. He attains eternal, blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and continues forever. So that is the secret of how to become truly happy in this lifetime, in this world. Perform tapasya, which means voluntarily accepting inconvenience to the mind and body for the purpose of purifying our existence and then elevating ourselves to the spiritual platform, and then we will experience an eternal blissful life. Now I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport, and we'll get a lot more further insight into this. And then we'll get a little bit more specific as we go on about exactly what that means to perform tapasya specifically. What do we have to do? So Prabhupada says, in this verse, Lord Rishabhdev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word Dehabak refers to anyone who accepts a material body. But the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals like dogs and hogs enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. Animals like dogs and hogs enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. Okay, there it is again. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. So that's a good deal. I mean, that's exactly what we want. I mean, it doesn't sound so nice to hear about how you have to voluntarily accept penances, suffering, and penances and austerities, but I like this second part, which is saying that we can enjoy happiness. After attaining divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. That's exactly what we want. So now you've heard exactly how to get it. I guess we'll continue on. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness, but as long as one is encaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. Does anybody disagree with that? No. Good. Because that's a fact. As long as one is encaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. Just on that note, just about, what a miserable place this material world is. Just in the course of the last 2 to 3 months, 3 months at most, just me, myself, in my own little world, I know of, one, two, three, four people who had cancer. Two were under 50, had been diagnosed with incurable cancer, and they're under 50 years old. And one just passed away day before yesterday, Mother Ojasvini. Maybe some of you might know her. She's a Prabhupada disciple. And, very nice devotee. She had cancer, and she suffered for about a year with that, and she passed away. So it's four people. It's the last couple months only. I know a devotee who was a Prabhupada disciple. He was riding his bike. He was hit by a car. Another devotee had a stroke, and he's really having a hard time. He's having a hard time moving. He's having a hard time speaking. And another devotee was shot and killed. And that's just in the last couple months. And, I was thinking to myself, boy, what do I want? Sometimes I ask myself this question. I ask myself, ideally, what do I want? And I really can't come up with any specific thing. I just come up with a general sort of vague answer. I think, well, I just want my life to be really wonderful, I want my life to be wonderful. And then over the last few days when I was reflecting upon all these, you know, these different unfortunate things that have happened to people I know, I was just thinking to myself, well, you know what? It's not going to happen here. It's not, this is not the place. You know, we're not in the right place to experience a wonderful life. I mean, you might feel, experience a little bit of wonderful life for a while, you know, here in the material world, but it's not going to last. And really, it's not set up for that purpose. You know, we're not meant to have a wonderful life here. I mean, actually, I don't know how I stumbled upon it, but the other day I was remembering this one person. He was like a fitness guru here in America, Jack LaLanne. Maybe some of you have heard of him. And he was interviewed when he was 81 years old. I'm giving him as an example of, like, you know, the best, you know, the most kind of one of the most successful people at having a wonderful life here in this material world. So from the when he was 81 years, he was interviewed, and they asked him, how you doing? How you feel? He said, I feel as good now as I did when I was 21. And I believe him. You know, he was in great shape. If you saw a picture of him, he looked good at 81. But he died a couple years ago. He was 96. And I saw pictures of him when he was like 93 and 94, and he looked old. So the point I'm making is not to, you know, disrespect him or make fun of him anyway, you know. But he was, that's the best. You know, he was like super famous and successful and healthy, really healthy. Okay, but he didn't live forever. I mean, he died at 96, and maybe for the last, at least probably the last couple of years of his life, he also probably had to undergo some suffering and discomfort and like that. So that's the best. What to speak of the rest of us, you know, the general mass of people who don't experience anything near the kind of quality of life, material life, at least that man experienced. So, you know, we're just really kidding ourselves if we're thinking that we're going to be able to have a wonderful life and be really happy here in this material. It's not the place for that. And on that point, Prabhupada says, but as long as one engaged in a material body, he has to suffer in different kinds of misery. Maybe I won't elaborate upon it anymore, but at this point, maybe later. Prabhupada goes on to say, a higher sense is present in human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. That's the program. That's where we're really going to experience a wonderful life, if we, you know, when we attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. And and if we're really, you know, serious about following this instruction, tapasya, which I'll explain a bit more about exactly how to go about doing that, we could experience that even in this lifetime. If not fully, partially. You know, you get just like, you know, when you go to a movie sometimes that before they see show you coming attractions, you know, there's, we might not fully experience what it's like to go back to Godhead, but even by performing devotional service in this life, in this world, we can get some, you know, coming attraction. We can get some, at least some small experience of what that's going to be like. And it's very encouraging. And Prabhupada goes on to say, it is significant in this verse that the government and natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. That's what we're doing here. That's what the whole purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is, to teach people how to perform bhakti yoga so that they can become blissful and happy. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. And that's what we have. And once you go past the boundaries of this community, you have a foolish civilization which neglects that. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or a dog. The instructions of Rishabhdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train, and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5. Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, His only happiness is a little sex. Yang mai tunedi grihamedi sukhamedi tucham. Rishabhdev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hogs. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya. So pardon me for reading that section. I'm reading the whole purport. I don't mean to harp on these kind of things, but anyway, it's Prabhupada and he's making those points. But here we go again. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the clutches, material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. See, so now we're hearing some really good news here. By taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 9, janma karma chame divyam evam yovita tatvataha chakvadeham punar jama naiti ma metu sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, or Arjuna. So that's the end of Srila Prabhupada's purport. So on this point, Prabhupada says, human life is meant for tapasya, austerity and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. So probably, hopefully, by this point in the class, you're all eager to know, if you don't know already, okay, well, what is that tapasya? You know, I mean, Sakatumi, what exactly is it? I understand, in general, the principles that I have to perform tapasya. You told me what that was. It's voluntarily accepting suffering or inconvenience to the body and mind for the purpose of advancing spiritually. But, you know, exactly, you know, what is it? Okay, I'll tell you. It's very simple. Actually, most of you did already one part of it this evening, chanting Hare Krishna. See? It's tapasya that, you know, that the program, the voluntary acceptance of suffering has been made very easy in this age by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, who is the devotional incarnation of Krishna. That the only tapasya that we have to perform in this day and age is we have to chant Hare Krishna. To start off with, any chanting is good, but if you want to be serious, if you want to actually get the full benefit of this process of, you know, bhakti yoga, then it's good to chant in the association of the devotees, like we're doing tonight, and also to chant on meditation beads. We chant on meditation beads, and we do that, you know, we chant a prescribed number of, names of Krishna every day. It works out to 1,728. And it takes about 2 hours. But that's what, you know, our spiritual master gave us, recommended that we should do if we want to. That's the tapasya, as far as the chanting goes. To chant on the beads, that many names of Krishna every day. And then beyond that, one should study this philosophy, read these books, you know, that like such as the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, which Suvas Prabhu was distributing earlier to the first time guests. By reading the books, one will become convinced of the importance of this philosophy, and consequently, one will become more determined. It'll give you determination and enthusiasm to want to actually practice this. So the chanting is there, and reading, you know, studying the philosophy by reading the books. And then when one has done those two things, actually the chanting and the reading go hand in hand, because the chanting, as we've heard here, purifies the consciousness. And when the more your consciousness is purified, the more you'll be able to understand and appreciate what's in these books. These books are meant to be understood more than just on an intellectual level. See, when you read the books, if you're reading and you're chanting at the same time, you'll understand them more deeply. You'll understand it on a more than intellectual level. And in addition to that, it's recommended that one should be a vegetarian and offer all his food to Krishna. And that's very simple. It's not that hard. Maybe it's hard if you're not doing it, but it's not that hard. It's, you know, I mean, anybody could be a vegetarian. I'm not going to go into the details, but if you do a little homework, if you study up on it, you'll find that there are so many advantages just to being a vegetarian: health, economic, moral, and ethical, philosophical. So, you know, in so many different ways, even just being a vegetarian is beneficial. And then you, when you're trying to be a devotee of Krishna, you offer that vegetarian food to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, fruit, flower, water, I accept. That food becomes transformed. When you make it like this devotional offering of vegetarian food, when a person who's trying to become a devotee of Krishna makes this a devotional offering of vegetarian food to Krishna, Krishna accepts, that food becomes transformed, and it takes on a spiritual quality. So when you eat it, you're not only nourishing your body, but you're actually purifying your consciousness. That's how it works. So by eating it, and actually there's a Sanskrit word that refers to food, such food in that category, is called prasad, which actually means the mercy of the Lord. So when you eat this vegetarian food stuff, which we'll be doing shortly, it not only satisfies you, you know, nourishes you materially, tastes good, and nourishes you materially, but it actually purifies your consciousness. And it's actually a very important part of devotional service. And it's very easy to do. You know, there's one very nice verse in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, referring to this process, he says, Raja Vija Raja Guyam Pavitram Idamutamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmam Sushukam Kartam Avyam. That this knowledge is the king of education. It's the most secret of all secrets. But it gives direct perception of the self by realization. In other words, as you start practicing this, you know, this, what these things I'm describing to you, you're not going to have to ask anybody, is it working? You can experience it for yourself. You'll experience it for yourself. That's what prakshak pratyak savagamam dharmam means, direct perception of the self by realization. You actually experience how your consciousness is becoming transformed. And sushukam kartam avyam, it's joyfully performed. It's not that difficult to do. It's tapasya. We're hearing the word tapasya, but it's very easy tapasya. Anyway, so far we have three things: chanting Hare Krishna, if possible, a prescribed number of times in the meditation beads, like the initiated devotees do. Studying the philosophy, you know, it's reading the books. Also not very difficult. Being a vegetarian, offering your food to Krishna, or it's eating only prasad, food which is offered to Krishna, vegetarian food which is offered to Krishna in love and devotion. You could come here and eat prasad here. You can do it at home. Okay? Actually, even if you just do those three things. Oh, sorry. I forgot. If you do those three things, you're really making, you know, you're really on the... On a roll. You're really moving in a very very strongly in a positive direction. And there's a nice verse Prabhupada used to quote frequently from the Vedic literature called the Padma Purana. It goes, Atahak Shri Krishna Namani Nabhaved Graya Nidriye Sevan Mukhehi Jivado Svayam Eva Sparatira, that Krishna cannot be understood by the material senses. Actually, the word Graya means blunt, dull. In other words, you can't figure Krishna out. You can't understand Krishna by your mind, you know, by trying to sit down and really think, well, what is Krishna like? What is God like? You're not going to, you don't get any understanding or realization like that. But that same verse says, Sevan mukehi jivado svayam eva sparatyada. But he's not understood by the blunt material senses or the process of mental speculation, but he is understood by devotional service, jivado, beginning with the tongue. Beginning with the tongue. And Prabhupada would always tell us how the tongue has two functions. One is tasting, and one is vibrating sound. Talking, chanting, like that. And on numerous occasions, Srila Prabhupada, in lectures that he gave, and it's in his books and many different places, he made this point. He would say, if somebody just does these two things, if they just make a vow. He'd say like this, make a determination. Something, you know, he'd say it in different ways on different occasions. Take a vow, make a determination. You know, only eat prasadam and only talk about Krishna and chant Hare Krishna. And he said, if you just do those two things, then you'll become Krishna conscious. Of course, it might sound very easy. It's actually a little harder than... it's easier said than done. But once again, it's not, you know, not that hard. I mean, we can try. We can work at it. And we'll gradually get, you know, make progress. We'll get better and better at learning how to engage our tongue fully in devotional service by only eating prasadam and only talking about Krishna, talking about devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna. It's not impossible. It is something that, you know, that requires just, you know, making up your mind to try to do it and, you know, really making an effort to do it, but it's not impossible. You know, and as I said, Rome is that expression, Rome wasn't built in a day, or, you know, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So we can start, you know, we could start and just start doing it and practice. And as we practice, we'll get better at it. Now, in addition to that, if one really wants to get in the fast lane and make, you know, very rapid and solid progress, advance in spiritual life, one can follow what we refer to as the four regulative principles, which is no illicit sex, no meat eating, well, we mentioned that one already, no intoxication, and no gambling. And because these are activities that actually make it harder for us to reawaken our, you know, revive our dormant spiritual consciousness. See? That's a, you know, spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness is already within us. There's a very nice verse, can't remember where it's from, but it goes, Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sabu Kabainaya, Shravanade Sute Chitte, Kordida. That pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, and it just has to be revived by the process of hearing and chanting, or just what I was describing so far. It's revived by exactly these things I've mentioned so far. But the problem is, though, those activities that I just mentioned that we shouldn't perform, illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, they do the opposite. They, you know, rather than help revive Krishna consciousness, they cover it over, you know. And just Prabhupada gives an example in one purport in this Bhagavad Gita. He says, trying to awaken Krishna consciousness while engaging in sense gratification, those particular activities are considered the four, you know, major sense gratification. He says, like trying to light a fire while pouring water on it. Doesn't work, right? Everybody, if you ever experienced that, doesn't work. You can't light a fire if you're pouring water on it simultaneously. And if you want to light a fire, light something on fire, it's got to be, ideally, it should be very, very dry. And then it just lights right up. So in the same way, if we, on the strength of, you know, on the spiritual strength that we receive from chanting Hare Krishna, reading these books, eating prasadam, if we then make a decision, okay, now I'm going to follow those rules and regulations, then whoosh, it's like you really start making rapid advancement. You really start advancing very rapidly in Krishna consciousness, and you really will experience you know, transformation in your consciousness and how you're making progress. And the only thing, in addition to those things, the next level after that, is that you should start trying to organize your life in such a way that as close as possible, you're fully engaged in devotional service. You should try to, like, organize your life in such a way that as much as possible you're serving Krishna in some way or another. And if you can do it, like, 100%, if you're able to, you know, move into a temple even and be fully engaged in devotional service, so much the better. But if not, then just come as close as you can. You know, the more service we can engage in, the better. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's one nice shloka where Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, which means, always think of me, become my devotee. Prabhupada says in one purport, he says, that's the most important instruction in all of the Vedic literatures. Always think of Krishna, never forget him. So that's what, you know, all these things are meant to be helping us come to that point of always remembering Krishna, never forgetting him, always trying to be engaged in his service. And one other helpful thing, very helpful thing, is in addition to all these things I've mentioned so far, which if you just do those, you're doing really, really good. But if in addition to all those things, if you try to share this with other people, then that's also very powerful, a very potent and powerful way to make more advancement. Prabhupada, once again, said on like numerous occasions, he said, to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, because that's, you know, that's what we want, to be recognized by Krishna. It's not mechanical. In other words, you know, our making advancement in spiritual life, it's not a mechanical thing. It's not that like, I hope I didn't make it sound like this, if you just do X, Y, and Z, you know, then automatically this happens. No. By performing these activities, we're actually showing, we're demonstrating to Krishna our desire. You know, these activities are an instrument, a mechanism by which we can demonstrate to Krishna our desire to reconnect with him, you know, to come closer to him, to revive our awareness of our eternal spiritual relationship with him. You see? So when we perform those, all these activities that I just mentioned so far, sincerely, Krishna's within our heart. And he knows. He sees that. He sees what's going on. And he reciprocates. There's a very nice verse, 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, he says this very, you know, himself. He says, Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. And he goes on, Tesham eva anukam partam aham magyamajam tamaha nasyami atmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. The translation for those two verses are, Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, right? So they're just, you know, just what we were talking about. You're trying to always be engaged in devotional service, and you're trying to do it in a nice devotional mood. Okay? So to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Then he says, out of compassion for them, I, who am dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. You see? So that's the reciprocation. Krishna's in our heart, and he knows everything. And he's aware of, in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that Krishna is aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. So he knows. He knows what we're thinking and feeling and everything at every moment. He's, you know, the super soul, right? So he knows. He knows, you know, what our attitude is and everything. And when he sees that it's favorable, you know, that we're really trying to engage in his devotional service sincerely, seriously and sincerely, then Krishna reciprocates, and that reciprocation takes the form of nasyami atmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. He destroys, it's a you know, metaphor, figure of speech, he destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And that means, practically speaking, that means that you start becoming aware of initially that, hey, I'm not this, I'm something much more than just this material body. I'm an eternal spiritual being. That's, you know, the first level. And you start becoming aware, you know, of your relationship with Krishna, ultimately. And the perfection is something called Swarup Siddhi, where when you're completely, you know, when Krishna is completely pleased with your efforts to engage nicely in devotional service, Krishna will reveal to you what your eternal spiritual relationship is with him. You see? So anyway, so getting back to the other point I was making, that being recognized by Krishna. So the only thing that's, you know, in addition to all these things I mentioned, if we try to share Krishna consciousness with other people, that's also very, very, very pleasing to Krishna. Right at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for one who preaches this message of devotional service to the devotees, it's guaranteed, devotional service is guaranteed. There's no servant in this world more dear to me than him, or he, or she, and there never will be one. So it's an activity that's very pleasing to Krishna. And that's the idea, to please Krishna. Actually, there's one nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that goes, Atak Pumbir Dvija Sreshta Varna Shrama Vibhagashaha Sunustitasya Dharmasha Sam Siddhir Haritoshanam. And basically, roughly the translation is that the perfection of all activities that one can perform, you know, all one's occupational duties, the perfection of everything that one can do is Sam Siddhir Haritoshanam. Just that Krishna, Hari, or Krishna, is pleased. is if you please Krishna, that's it. That's the perfection. So Krishna's, you know, he's not keeping it. He's making it it's an open secret, in other words. He's not keeping it a secret. What he makes it very clear what pleases him. That's all those things I mentioned, and as I said, in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that's the thing that pleases him a lot. You know, if we try to share it with other people. So if we just do those things, that's tapasya. Getting back to the original point of the class, that's tapasya. You know, very nice program. Chant Hare Krishna. If you can, 16 rounds on the beads. And you know what, Beyonce, look, it's not hard. Pretty much anybody in this room, if you put your mind to it, you could do it. It's not hard. You know, walk around and chant, sit, whatever, however you have to do it. Just do it. Force yourself. You know, that's tapasya, right? Remember, because the definition of tapasya was you voluntarily accept some suffering for spiritual advancement. So to start off, maybe it will be. You might find it a bit difficult. So what? Do it. You know, we do so many things that are difficult and inconvenient for material life, right? To make money or to whatever. So why not do something, voluntarily accept a little inconvenience or, you know, suffering for the purpose of advancing in spiritual life? So we can do it. Everybody in this room, you can do it. You know, chant Hare Krishna. If possible, get beads. Chant 16 rounds. Be a vegetarian. Offer your food to Krishna. Eat prasadam. That's the second tapasya. Not that difficult. Read these books. Also, that's not that difficult. That's a tapasya. You know? Follow the rules and regulations, those, you know, four regulative principles. If you do these, the first three things I just mentioned, you'll be able to do that too. Right? And if not right away, just practice, work at it. You'll get it. Maybe it'll take somebody 6 months. Maybe it'll take you a year. Maybe it'll take you 2 years. Whatever it takes, it's time and energy well spent. And then try to be fully engaged in devotional service and try to preach or share it with other people. That's tapasya. And if we do those things, those exact activities that I just mentioned, I don't think I skipped anything or left anything out, then you're doing what Prabhupada's referring to here. Then it says human life is meant for tapasya, austerity, and penance. That's what tapasya is. And it says here, by tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. It says when one is situated in Krishna consciousness, or when you're out of the material clutches, when you're in what's called Krishna consciousness, that your devotional service, your happiness is guaranteed eternally. You've made it. You've made it. There's nothing beyond that. There's nothing beyond becoming a pure devotee of Krishna and engaging in pure devotional service. This is it. You know, you don't have to, there's no other achievement you have to achieve after this. There's nothing. All you have to do is just become convinced of this and just try to do it. Anyway, I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question or comment about anything I said? Okay, I guess that means that everybody's it means one of two things. Either that everybody's in total agreement, or that everybody's really hungry, and they know if they ask a question, it's just going to go on longer than they don't want. So anyway, either way, it's okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Now, in case you're here for the first time, just follow everybody else. You kind of walk across the street, make a right-hand turn, and we're serving our feast underneath the men and women's ashram. So I hope you have a pleasant evening. Thank you. Hare Krishna.